So fun fact about Tori, she always leaves the toilet seat up and it drives me nuts.
I'm not a man. I don't understand how that's relevant to you.
Like, I already noticed you've been here for 5 minutes. Toilet seats are up.
Let's roll the intro.
Welcome back to Potty Talk,
the podcast where we shit talk ourselves.
I'm Jack.
And I'm Tor.
And we are fresh in spring allergy season, and I sound like a man. So if you guys like ASMR, we're going to have some Kleenex and sneezing ASMR this episode, so sorry in advance for that. But
well, I don't suffer from allergies, so if you want that nice speaking voice, welcome, because I am in perfect health. And Jacqueline is ill, so.
I'm not ill, okay, to clarify, not ill, just allergy. We actually were doing, we're training for a half marathon, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. I mean, I'm actually the slowest of the group, and that is no word of a lie. Jacqueline is actually the fastest of the group. So, yeah, I mean, initially we thought we were getting into this as friends and that we'd run it together, but it's become very clear very quickly that she will be running ahead of me during this race.
To be fair, we're also, like, I'm double your height, so.
Yeah, I'm 5'1". Don't feel bad about it. Yeah.
But no, it's definitely been a lot more confronting than we realized. We initially got approached to do like a half marathon for like a charity run, and we're like, that sounds awesome. And we enjoy working out for fun.
Yeah.
We're not fitness gurus by any means.
No.
By any means. But yeah, I don't know. We might have gotten a little in over our head. We got these magnets. We're working with Nike actually on it. This is not an ad, but I wish it was. Tori, your phone volume
is on.
Dude,
I literally put it. Okay.
It's literally on. I can see on the side.
No, but okay, it's silenced.
Podcast 101 over here. We got the marathon schedules, like our training schedules from our Nike coach, and on our Saturday runs, like we're supposed to run like what, 3 times a week?
Yeah, it's not going to happen, but I mean, I have to run 3 times a week to make this work, but we'll see.
Yeah, the Saturday runs are like, oh yeah, go out and jog like 15K. I'm like, that's a half marathon for me in itself.
Yeah, that's not normal.
So yeah, we'll keep you guys updated with how that pans out. But I am glad we're doing it. I feel like I would have never done a half marathon if it wasn't for this opportunity. So
yeah,
if
it wasn't forced truly upon me, I don't think I would ever choose to do it. So
yeah, when we were running yesterday, we were doing actually some laps around a track. And just being outside in nature, which I feel like I'm normally not, I realized that my allergies have really taken a toll. And it's very inconvenient that today is now when we're filming because I am just...
congested.
Sounding delicious.
Ew, that's disgusting.
Anyways, we had a very exciting week here in Toronto the past, week and a bit? Because the Raptors are moving on to the finals.
They are moving on. And I just have to say, I mean, as someone who grew up as a hockey fan, this bandwagon has just been unreal. Like, you know, getting on board at the end of the season when things get exciting is truly my favorite pastime. Like, it's so fun. The whole city is alive. The parties. I just love drinking with everyone. Everyone's so excited. And actually, did you see the police report that said that there was no arrests made that night? Can you believe that?
That's kind of beautiful.
I was like, go Toronto.
That's so Canadian.
It's so Canadian. Like, everyone's just so calmly celebrating the Raptors win.
I don't know. Well, it wasn't calm though. Did you see the video? So you weren't even in town.
No, this was like the saddest thing. I was in London, Ontario, which is so off brand for me as a person in general. So I just my boyfriend's from London, Ontario. Shouts out. I mean, not that that's a positive thing at all. But anyways, I was there.
We're gonna
visiting
have all
family.
Of our viewers from London, Ontario be like, that was so rude.
I was
we
there,
love you guys.
Yeah, but I'm from Toronto, so I'm like a city girl through and through. So taking me out of the city is like taking my soul out of my freaking chest. Like, it's just horrible. So anyways, I was not in Toronto, so then I was even more butthurt and had more FOMO because I'm seeing all the Twitter and Facebook posts about the celebrations and I'm sitting in London, Ontario, just like crying into my wine glass.
Absolutely crazy. I wasn't even watching the game. That's how
wow.
I was like tucked in bed by like 9 o'clock that night.
That's disgusting.
And I woke up at probably like what, like 11 o'clock and I just hear like chaotic screaming, like the biggest celebration. And you can just hear the entire town is booming.
Yeah.
Horns are going off. And then later on Twitter, I saw that I think it was right at Front Street and
where people were
at Union
on the
Station.
Cars.
Yeah, they were on top of a police car, just jumping on top of the buses, and it was like a chaotic celebration. But everyone was so happy, and
just like Drake gives me hope, and like the Raptors give me hope, and I'm just happy.
Well, I just feel like we have so much pride and like such a community.
Well, especially because the Leafs have just let us down so many times. We don't really have other teams we can rely on. So the fact that now Kawhi has, like, brought us to the end and, like, has made this just the most exciting season is just enlightening. And we're not sporty girls, really, by any means. So the fact that, like, we're still super involved, I think, says a lot about the spirit of the city.
Well, I just feel like we're such Toronto girls now. Like, I mean, I grew up, I didn't live in Toronto. I lived about an hour and a half outside from a lovely small town called Caledonia.
Unheard of by most people.
I'm really happy. In hindsight, I'm so glad that I grew up in a small town. But we were lucky that it was so close to Toronto that it was just like an hour and a half kind of drive away. But now living here, I actually love Toronto so much. And I honestly didn't think growing up that I would be here permanently. I mean, I always knew that, like, it was kind of, I don't want to say a stepping stone, but, like, for me, I was like, I'm so going to be moving to the States when I'm older. Like, that, as a child, that was my, like, dream, the vision.
Yeah.
And I for sure thought I was going to end up in the States. And now that I'm here and have been living here for, like, 5 years, I'm like, there's no way I'm leaving anytime soon.
Yeah.
I don't think ever. I think I will always have a home base here.
Same. I agree, which is interesting because I grew up in Toronto, and so I always thought I'd want to go to the next best thing. But I lived in New York for a bit when I was in... I guess right before university, I lived there for a summer doing a program at NYU. And then I also lived in LA, I guess my second year of university when I was doing a program at UCLA. But then both of my experiences led me to believe, maybe Toronto really is the right place for me.
Wait, what did you not like about it?
Well, I think New York, I wasn't quite ready for it yet. I guess I was only 16 or 17, so... It felt really lonely. And I guess even when you get older, like, I've heard people and friends who live there say the same thing. So it's not that I was just thrown off maybe because I was young, because I obviously always felt way more mature than my peers. But I did feel like...
I was gifted.
No, but I did feel like I had a lot more life experience by the time I was 17 than most people. I had obviously been working professionally since I was 14. There was already a lot of, like, things that I had checked off my bucket list and had worked on. But I really did feel lonely while I was there. And then when I went to L.A., the people there give me major anxiety. Like, seriously, like, they're...
And now all of our L.A. fans hate us, so great work.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I love visiting L.A. My best friend Madison lives in L.A. I still continue to go there all the time. And I love being there for a short amount of time. But this was my analogy when I got back from L.A., and it still rings true to me. When I got back, my parents said, how did you feel about your time in L.A.? And I said, well, Los Angeles is like a cheesecake. You get there, and you're like, oh, my God, this is the sweetest and most rich dessert I've ever had. I want it all the time. It's just so indulgent and fabulous and luxurious. And then by the end, you're like... By the end of the 3 months that I'd lived there, I was like, holy shit, I never want to eat a piece of cheesecake ever again in my life. And that was just...
Is that your quote?
That was my analogy when I got home. Beautiful. And I said that to my parents when I was, like, probably 18. I was just, you know, so profound about it. But I truly still believe that it rings true because it is just so much. It's so much of everything. It's so fake. It's so, processed and, like, you know, sugary.
Yeah, and I think it's very, like, if you are in that kind of crowd or that group, like, it's hard to stay away from all of that bad, like, toxic energy that I feel like you hear everyone talk about, like, the downside of LA.
Totally. I think we've also been able to really leverage our audiences in a more strategic way being in Canada because not every single person is doing what we're doing. Like, it's really hard to stand out in a town where every person is basically rooting to do the exact same thing, whether that's acting or whether that's, you know, becoming a blogger or influencer, YouTuber, all of these things. It's
I fully always said that I would not have a sustainable career if I did not live in Toronto and do YouTube. Because you go to LA and it's like the big dogs and it's everyone and you're a small fish in a big pond. And
totally.
I would fully not have survived. I would have had to stop and, you know, do something else. There's no way.
I think there's also a beauty in, like, making the creative industries in Canada more of a hub and more of a place where people want to be. I think there was a lot of backlash against Drake recently, actually, like, in reference to all of our Raptors talk about how, you know, like, he's just, like, taking too much credit and all of these things. And it's like, okay,
but... He put Toronto on the map, though, I feel like.
He put Toronto on the map. There's even, like, stats that I heard, I was reading about that were saying that, like, he has really influenced our tourism in Toronto and has really impacted the amount of people that come to visit our city. And I think the same rings true for us. Like, if we can stand up and, like, advocate for how awesome it is to live in Canada, then, like, I don't see a problem with
that. And that's, like, truly what I believe. Now that I'm here, I'm like, Toronto is the best city ever and I would not trade it for the world, and I'm just so obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And it is kind of, not that it's sad, because I totally understand why many business people do this and why many up-and-coming YouTubers or whatever, eventually, once they have a little bit of success here in the city, kind of like, exactly, it's the story where everyone then goes to LA and they pursue it there.
Yeah.
And we live in such an interesting time that our jobs, it doesn't matter where in the world you are, you can still do what you do because we have the internet.
It's so mobile. Like, you can be anywhere. Mobile, yeah.
For sure. So, I mean, sure, some people can argue that they do need to be in LA to do it, but I think there really is a beauty in, like you were saying, making Toronto that creative hub, and like, why can't it be here?
Right.
So, I mean, knock on wood, someone's going to play this like in 10 years
we're
in LA.
In LA. We're like, yeah, just kidding. Actually, just kidding.
Yeah, or LA's like where we need to be.
But even if that was the case, I would be in New York way faster than I would be in LA. It's just way more on brand for me.
So. And I grew up always saying that I was going to be in LA. When you look back, though, at all your failed childhood dreams, it's very confronting. But
true.
If you were to ask me when I was up until probably like 16, I mean, I grew up thinking I was going to be an actress. That was my thing. I started acting when I was like 6 years old and just doing like small little things here and there. And it wasn't until I was like probably 11 that I booked the role on Dino Dan. And I was doing that for like two and a half years, something like that. And then after that, I didn't do anything like really notable other than just small little one-off things. And I was like, oh, this is not what I thought.
I thought
the Nick Jr. show was going to, like, be a stepping stone to all these other things.
Right.
And it's kind of confronting when you're like, okay, I'm putting in all this effort. And especially with the acting industry, I think it's really hard because you can be putting in your heart and soul and everything into it.
Doesn't mean you're going to get anything out of it.
Exactly. It's not your call. It's the casting director. It's the director. It's that team that's like, no or yes. And it was really hard for me to understand that I could be doing everything right.
And still not book the role.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And having control is maybe something that I have a problem with. I wanted to be in control.
No, totally.
And so that was really hard for me. And then kind of like deciding, okay, how do I reroute this? Because I think craziness or insanity is when you keep on doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like 16 at the point where I was graduating school early. And I was like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
I let this like acting thing kind of define and be like the
catapult into your career.
Everything. And then when I was like, okay, now what do I do? Mm-hmm. What's the game plan? And I didn't know. And that like honestly, I think I cried myself to sleep every night for a good year in high school, just being so stressed out about, like, the future and what my path
like,
was.
Like, who would you be? Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And then looking back, you're like, oh, all of that actually, I think, led me to where I am today in the sense that I was so lucky that I grew up, like, working on camera, understanding that industry a bit.
Yeah.
And feeling confident being on camera now, doing what we do.
Totally.
And then also, I ended up going to school for makeup and then working in the film and TV industry doing makeup. And I was really fortunate. I got hired on by the same production company that did the show when I was younger.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sinking Ship. You guys have been great. And then even just understanding the more back end of that world and understanding, like, the whole crew side of things, I feel like, again, has helped me with my YouTube and doing all of this because I just have such a greater understanding. So it's one of those things where you truly can only connect the dots looking back and be like, oh, I did that for so many years to kind of prepare me for what I'm doing now.
We were saying that, like, how you can only really tell, you can never fully understand it until it's in retrospect.
Oh,
like,
totally.
Unless you have that 5 years to really look back and say, oh, that's why that happened, or oh, that's why that put me in that direction. Mm-hmm. But when you're so stuck in it, it's really hard to swim out of it.
No, because it makes no sense.
Yeah.
If I was, whatever, 14 and someone was going to be like, Jacqueline, in whatever, how old am I now, 21? In 7 years, you're going to be doing YouTube full time. You're going to be living in Toronto. You're going to be doing XYZ. And like, I would have never believed that.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you? What did you think when you were like 14? What did you think your like route was or your game plan or where do you think you'd be now?
Yeah, it's ironic because actually I never thought I was going to be an actor. Like, I remember being on
set
of Life with Boys. Yeah, I remember, like, being literally the lead of a TV show and being like, yeah, this is, like, not my path.
And a huge, like, Nickelodeon show, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't just some random
Joe
Blow.
Yeah, it wasn't that I wasn't obsessed with the experience, because I totally was, and I was enthralled by it, and I learned so much, and it still, to this day, rings as, like, one of my most favorite experiences in my life. But I do remember having conversations with producers and even, like, makeup artists. You know, you're, like, chatting in the makeup desk, and they'd be like, oh, so, you know, what's next? What's after this? And I always remember being like, yeah, well, you know, like, I have so many other passions. I have so many other interests. Like, I would hate to only put my, you know, like, as you would say, like, eggs in one basket type of thing. And I think it goes back to what you were talking about, not having that control. It was always very obvious to me that I did not have control in that industry, because you're really relying on other people to give you those opportunities, wherein nowadays, I would say you and I, much like this podcast, are just going to create opportunities for ourselves because we're passionate about so many different things. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like the idea that I was going to end up in this shoebox that someone was going to say, oh, well, you know, like, we're going to typecast her like this, and she's only going to get roles like this.
Yeah.
And again, it's like such an ego game. You're going to these auditions, you're putting all this time in, you're not necessarily getting the role. And that is exhausting. And I think
mentally also kind of like...
Mentally and physically you. Exhausting. But yeah. It's interesting because I think as a kid, I was way better at handling that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
As I enter my 20s or as I entered my 20s, I started to get really fed up about how that industry was working. Because I didn't... I think some of it is still, we have talked about, a little bit archaic. Like, you're doing these self-tapes, but then... Who's actually watching them? Like, I'm paying $100 to make a self-tape, mm-hmm. but, like, can I confirm the casting director is actually going back and looking at my work? Like, all of it is, it hasn't quite adapted into our, like, digital age yet, mm-hmm. I feel, in some ways.
I still find it interesting, though, that there tends to be a lot of, like, animosity between, like, the whole digital world and, like, influencers or YouTubers and the whole traditional media world, whether it be acting, TV, film, all that
100%,
stuff.
100%. They hate us.
And at first, when I was 16, and I mean, I still have my acting agent. I still go out on a few auditions and stuff, but it's not, like, anywhere, like, the scale that I used to do before because yeah. YouTube is, like, more my focus. I'm also just trying to make sure that if any casting director's watching this, they don't hate me for saying any of this. But I remember at first, I was talking to my agent when I was, like, starting my YouTube channel, and I was like, do you think this is, like, a bad call kind of thing? And this is back in, like, 2014, so I feel like YouTube, it wasn't as,
yeah.
known. Yeah,
really.
Well, everyone does YouTube now, but, like, back then it was still, like, a little bit of, like, a weird, like, oh, she's a weirdo for making a video on the internet.
Right.
And a lot of people actually like, I don't want to say shied away and told me not to do it, but a lot of people were, like, a little hesitant, like, I don't know if this is a good look for your acting thing, or,
right.
like, whatever. And I got to the point where I was like, well, I don't care. I'm not booking any roles right now, so I'm going to sit and do something that's fun. And I never went into it. Like, I don't know about you. I mean, I don't think you did either with your whole Instagram thing. But for me, YouTube was never like, I have a business plan. I'm 16. I'm going to make this my career.
No.
I was fully just like, I'm on my gap year. I'm bored. And I just, like, want to make videos. And I was watching YouTube all the time. And I was like,
totally.
I just want to be that. I want to do that. I want it to be like the Mac Barbie 07 or like the Juicy Star 07. Like, all those girls that, like, really, I feel like, paved the way for beauty gurus back in the day, and I just wanted to do that.
I think we continue to be lucky, though, because in some ways, like, we were at the cusp of what that entire industry has become.
Oh,
so in a lot of ways, like, it would be harder for people to build audiences and kind of, like, get to maybe the level we've been able to get at thus far, like, mm-hmm. in our span of time, because it really hasn't been that long that we've been doing this, but now it's so saturated, and now everyone's trying to do it.
That's so true.
Anyways, back to my story about acting.
Oh, sorry. Did I cut you off?
No, not really. I
have a problem.
We were just talking about casting and all that stuff. But
oh, yeah. Being archaic.
Yeah. Like, or just not necessarily, like, modernizing as fast as kind of the influencer YouTube digital world has gone.
Right.
Has
it's so fast-paced.
Except for, like, Netflix, who's doing, like, kind of an amazing job at, like, all of their original content and all of those things. But I think in Canada, like, we collectively have work to do to make our industry more exciting and, like, more, you know, fruitful. But anyways, my childhood, I was talking about, like, not necessarily wanting to be an actor. Mm-hmm. I always went back to the idea that I wanted this, like, business foundation. I don't know where that came from.
You've always been very school-driven.
Totally. Like, kind of a nerd deep down, like, really into the more, like, theoretical, analytical, like, side of things. And also, like, those, like, tactical skills, like, negotiation and, like, pitches. And I always had a lot of interest in that. So I think it in some ways does not surprise me that I ended up going to university for that, because I think it actually deep down was something I was always very passionate about. Even though on the surface level, everyone thought I was going to be a performer.
Right.
So it was more like a perception of what people thought I was. And then there was a bit of, like, I felt like people thought maybe I had failed because I didn't go that direction.
Oh,
but it
really?
Was, well, maybe. But I think it was much more like a personal choice. Like, I mean, I didn't. My goal was that I wanted to, at one point, go to Broadway. Like, I was going to go more theater route and, like, not do film and television. Then when that dream was, like, crushed when I didn't get into NYU, which was, like, a whole other different story. But I think not getting into the university of your choice,
it's crushing.
Is crushing, but also, like, kind of amazing, because it, like, really forces you to fail in a really extreme way that is not necessarily going to impact your life in any crazy way once you look back at it. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, failure is, like, so important. Like, when I look back, it was probably the most pivotal time for me. But at the time, it was, like, the worst thing that could have possibly happened. But the reality was, like, no one had died. I hadn't lost $1 million. Like, it wasn't... It's not failure in the real world. It's failure as a teenager.
Well, it's that whole thing important. What you're talking about when you have that, like, path kind of structured in your head, like, X, Y, Z is going to happen, yeah, and then I'm going to do this.
You have it all figured
out. Like, you feel
out.
Like your world's crashing down. I'm sure. Were you, like, what was
the
aftermath?
Oh, my God. I literally laid, I remember specifically laying out in the field of my high school in the grass, just, like, head up to this guy, and I was like, I'm done. I was like,
my life is over.
This is it. And I got really lucky because at the time we were actually right in the middle of our, like, annual performance, like, our theater. Our big like show, and I was one of the leads of the show, so there was a lot of pressure on me, and I was clearly underperforming because, like, emotionally I was just unavailable. And actually, we had this naturopath who used to come in. Her name was Helga, lovely, lovely lady. And she sat with me and she, like, hugged me, and I just started, like, literally bawling. And then she told me her story about how, like, she hadn't initially gotten into med school and, like, all of these things, and how her path just ended up, like, working out. Yeah, she really helped me through that, so shouts out Helga. But I think the lesson there is, if you're in that, like, really dark moment, it actually can be super helpful to talk to someone very much outside of it. Because I don't think I would have, like, broken down that way if it was, like, chatting with my parents or even a friend. Because it's hard to be that vulnerable.
Like, oh, totally.
When you totally have felt like you've failed yourself.
Yeah.
And it's, like, your biggest dream. Yeah, like, I took some time off school. I was like,
oh, really?
Yeah, I was in full recovery. I was not good.
But I do really think that's, like, such an important life skill to have, and something that I've kind of gained in hindsight as well, is, like, adaptability and also being able to roll with the punches. Because realistically, like, in anyone's life, not everything is going to kind of follow that formula you have in your head.
I think it's
how
hard.
You recover or still reroute the path to get where you want to get to.
It's not until you get older that you get a little better at that, and, like, you start to learn, like, opportunities are like buses. There's always one around the corner.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to see that when you're younger, I think.
Oh, for sure. Well, it's like the, what was the quote about from Kris Jenner? There's the speech impediment coming out. Kris Jenner.
Oh, Kris Jenner.
You can tell I'm still half asleep. Kris Jenner said the other day, what did she say? Keeping up. If someone says no, you're asking the wrong person.
Yeah.
And I kind of love that quote because it is true. It's
like,
it's up to you, and no one's going to advocate for yourself as much
of
as yourself.
Of course not.
So if someone says no or shuts an idea down, figure it out. Go with someone else. Make it happen.
Yeah.
If it's something that you truly know you have to do, or it's kind of the next step, figure it out.
I've also, like, met some women later in my life that I think have really put that to the test and, like, have been told no a bajillion times. And it's really crazy to see the success they can reach when they just will not take no for an answer.
Yeah.
And it's possible, like, but you really have to want it, and you really have to care, and I think that's how you grow, and that's how you become successful, honestly, by just not constantly feeling like the world is at ends with you. We have friends that think that the world is out to get them, and, like, there's this, like, negative energy and vibe around people, and that just attracts more negativity.
Well, it's like what we were talking about, like, we say this all the time, mindset totally changes everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
if you approach things with that negative energy, why would you expect anything to come back at you in a positive way?
Yeah, or you're just so blinded by that you can't see any of the good things that are happening as well. Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's super crazy, and it's hard, though. I feel like also, because I feel like on the reverse, like, back in high school, I kind of, like, went through some moments of, like, being super down and just, like, so confused about life. When you're in it, it feels so hard to get out of.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like right now, and it's almost scary because I feel like I'm on a roll in the sense that mentally I feel like I'm in a good spot. I feel very motivated with my work.
Yeah.
I feel very inspired. I feel like I'm fully able to achieve everything that I'm setting out to do.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm, like, still dying from this
phlegm. I think it's interesting, too, because it comes in waves, right?
Oh, so, and that's the scariest part, though. I'm like, things are going so good. When am I going to crash? When am I going to, like, fall into a deep depression again? Like,
it's true. And it's almost frightening when...
But you don't want to think like that. Like,
no, you can't. And when the highs come, you have to ride the highs because there are lows. And you know...
Well, and you never know, especially in this industry, when this is going to get swept, like, the rug's going to get pulled from under our feet, because...
We talked about this. With Instagram recently, they rolled out their algorithm that basically...
Sorry, guys.
Jacqueline is dying
from
her allergies.
I need a minute.
Okay, the phlegm has been cleared. Yeah, we were chatting recently about how Instagram had changed their analytics, specifically in Canada, which I just think is an extreme target against us. But anyways, they were taking likes, visible likes, away from people's profiles. So now brands and or your followers would not be able to see how many likes you're getting on a photo.
This was a mental health initiative
about basically helping young kids not invest so much time and effort into likes and into sort of that, like, what the world perceives as of your online identity. So I'm aligned with that. I totally agree. And I think that if we had had Instagram at that age, like,
oh, we would have been way more messed up
and all of those things, because our identities were already very much set in stone by the time that I was sharing things online with an audience.
Well, I think the difference is with that generation, and even looking down to younger people like my cousins, they're like at the cusp of it. They're like in grade 8 and grade 10 right now, and they've like grown up with Instagram and all of that. And we were lucky we had a taste of social media, but it was not to the extent that it is now. But for them...
Well, like, it was Facebook, but even then it was like...
It's different though.
And you couldn't really get yourself into too much trouble on Facebook. I mean, I guess you could if you were sharing the wrong things,
yeah,
but it was more like chatting with friends and like, totally, you know, messaging the boys. Like and all those things.
But the difference is that for a lot of younger people these days, I feel like we're so...
Wait, old. Shouts out MSN. Yo, what? Who remembers MSN?
I was never allowed to have MSN.
What? Okay, no, MSN was like the best thing ever, and it was like you'd like write out captions and you'd always like message your crushes. Okay,
this
is the most iconic throwback. I remember sitting in my friend Shireen's house on MSN. We were messaging this guy we liked when Justin Bieber released One Time.
Oh.
And she goes, hey, look, this guy just released this music video. He's wearing the purple American Apparel sweater.
I was never in the Justin Bieber
And I was
phase.
Like, wow. And I just look back and I think, now he's married.
To Hailey Bieber.
Yeah.
Wow. We went to some random masterclass event and Hailey was there as like the model getting her makeup done at some Bear Mirrors event.
I forgot about that.
And we were truly... blown away. Like,
she
was
beautiful.
A goddess. And we were like, her ankles are so nice. She has the best ankles I've ever seen, and I fully stand by this.
Yeah.
And her ring, oh my God. Actually, so funny story about Hailey.
Face, yeah.
Yeah, no, she's ridiculously stunning and very, like, just very sweet.
Regal.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Looks just so.
So, funniest story about Hailey Bieber. She was actually my very first interview ever.
Oh, yeah, at Much. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I always grew up wanting to, like, be hosting and interviewing, and now that I work with Much, I get to do that, which is still the craziest thing ever. But it was my very first MMVAs, which is, like, the Much Music Video Awards, kind of equivalent to the American version of the VMAs, like, the Video Music Awards. And Much Music is kind of, like, the Canadian version of MTV, for context, for any American viewers. Anyway, so it was the very first MMVAs that I was attending as someone who was supposed to be there, not as a fan at the sidelines, which I used to go as a fan.
Yeah.
To watch the red carpet go down. So I was interviewing inside the building during the show, and I think it was called the one-on-one suite or something, which sounds very intense now. Anyway, so basically, long story short, what would happen is that the talent would be walking by in between, like, the show and them going to the green rooms, and people on my team would kind of help pull those people in, pull their publicists in, and be like, hey, we're doing a thing for MTV, come in, we're filming an interviews kind of thing. But this was so unstructured that you didn't really know who you would get or who would even
she
be down to do it.
She just walks in.
So what happens, I'm sitting there, and I'm, like, so nervous. I'm 18 at the time, and I'm just like, I've got, like, riddled with acne, and I've got layers of makeup on. I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. I can't believe I'm
riddled
even in this,
with acne.
In this, like, building right now. And I'm thinking the whole time, we're going to get kind of the smaller talent. There's a lot of people that go to the MMVAs that don't even, like, make it, say, in the actual live show, but just lots of different artists that kind of come for the party and to stay backstage and whatever, to network, blah, blah, blah. So I'm thinking we're going to get kind of those guests, not necessarily, like, our headlining, like, main talent. I think that must have been the year, was that the year Gigi Hadid was hosting, or maybe?
That would make sense.
Or maybe it was the year after. I can't remember. Anyways, Gigi Hadid's there, Hailey Bieber, or Hailey Baldwin at the time. And all of a sudden, we get a knock on the door, and a publicist comes in, and they go, and, like, I've been sitting in this room waiting for a half an hour. Nothing's happened. Like, I'm just sitting there waiting. And we get a knock on the door, and the publicist comes in and goes, okay, I've got Hailey Bieber here. She's down to do this. No questions about Bieber. No questions about Drake. Let's film this.
They said no questions about Bieber at that time?
Which is so interesting. Now, in hindsight, I don't know if this is, like, confidential. Maybe I shouldn't be saying this on camera.
I don't think it's confidential now. They're married.
Yeah. And at the time, it was so funny. Yeah, I was told I was not allowed to talk about Bieber. And it was really funny because the whole segment that we were filming was, like, kind of Canadian-themed questions. So it was, like, things about Justin Bieber. And I was like, okay, got it, ma'am. Like, no questions about Bieber. Bring her in.
Yeah.
And she came in, and she was the sweetest person ever. And there's still video footage of this. You can go on my YouTube channel and pull up this interview. You can tell I'm, like, so nervous and giddy. And she was honestly so, so sweet. And Aww. Ever since that moment, like, I always had such a good impression from her because
yeah.
she made me feel so comfortable. She was so receptive. receptive for my very first interview ever.
That's
and like,
so nice.
So I always have like the best things to say about her. I think she's the sweetest.
Yeah, and
she's beautiful.
She was really nice when we met her too.
Like, yeah, and again,
good vibes.
Great energy. Hailey Bieber.
Wow.
Great work, girl.
Well, we were chatting about Instagram and the analytics and kind of how we are at the mercy of these platforms that are rolling out all of these changes. And I don't know, I've always been such a pessimist about the industry. Obviously, I'm a big part, like I play into the industry, but at the same time, I've always felt like this, like they are holding the key to my death.
Well, it's true. And I think when you have things like, say, when Instagram takes away your likes and that's what you're so reliant on to sell to companies, to sell to advertisers, to whatever, be like, oh, I get this much engagement, I get this many likes.
Yeah.
It's scary because it makes you realize that this can be pulled from under our feet so quickly and that we're so reliant on platforms that we have no control over.
I know.
I'm reliant that the YouTube algorithm pushes out my videos to the right eyeballs. You're reliant that your Instagram photos are getting to your followers. But we kind of don't control that. And just in a second, they can roll out a different feature, roll out how that platform works, and changes everything. So I think it's nice in the sense that in Canada, the likes got taken away for a temporary time because it made us realize that.
And yeah.
You called me that day. You're like, yo, this is crazy. I just realized like
you
how dependent
wake up.
I...
Yeah, you
totally.
Need these wake-up calls to also push you to try new things mm-hmm. in your career and not feel like you're working for the platform, but do things for yourself and, mm-hmm. you know.
The whole thing, though, about them taking away likes, do you believe that that is helpful? Because I have some thoughts about it.
I mean, I don't know that it's not helpful, but I also just think that it's such a Band-Aid solution. Like, if you're really talking about kids' self-esteem, then why aren't they rolling things out in these schools, like support and different things, like in real life that are actually going to help these kids? Like, whether that's creating programs that kids can find their passions or, you know, like mm-hmm. dance or cheerleading or hockey or all these things that gave me a lot of joy as a kid were my extracurricular activities. Where I think those things are now getting lost and kids are just sitting at home and they're scrolling on Instagram. They don't go outside anymore. Like, those are the more things that
I'm so old.
I know, which I'm not old. I'm 22. But I do see that there is a shift in also confidence. And I think that, like, the fact that we didn't have to necessarily share all these things about ourselves at a young age was really important because it helped us really find our identities amongst our family and friends and people who loved us as opposed to having outside people judge us.
Yeah, well, I think the big problem or one problem is that to a lot of these kids that are growing up using it is that their social media is who they are. And I think for us,
tied
it's what we
identity.
Do.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
who we are.
Yeah.
And I feel lucky that I can totally find the barrier. I can go on, do my things, catch up, see what my friends are doing,
yeah.
post my videos, whatever.
And then shut it off.
And yeah. I think, I don't know if it's just because since I work in this industry, I'm so aware of the time that I spend on it.
Well, it feels like work sometimes for us. So it's okay. Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
Not always. We have awesome jobs. Let's not, like, sugarcoat it.
We're very, very privileged.
But at the same time, I think we're able to find that line of, like, okay, look, you know, today I'm just going to be with my family.
My whole thing with it is that, like you were saying, it is a Band-Aid solution. I understand the initiative of, okay, kids are relying too much of their self-esteem or self-worth based off of how many likes they're getting.
Right.
Like, I agree. That is a problem.
Yeah.
But I think just taking it away doesn't fix the problem. The problem is that they are relying on external sources for validation.
100%.
Versus having that self-confidence from within.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not the likes they're going to base it off of, they're going to base it off of how many
else.
Comments they're getting or how many, still, how many followers they have.
Even versions of that when we were growing up, mm-hmm. it just wasn't social media. Like, nothing is actually changing. There was that platform, which was an awful platform.
Ask FM?
Yeah, or like
Formspring.
Yes. Awful. It was like,
it was a bullying
anonymous,
platform.
Literally
bullying.
Anonymous messages
yeah.
about people, whether that was based on their personality, their physical looks.
And
it was
nasty.
Nasty. And people would write the meanest things. And because it was anonymous, they felt like they could get away with it. So that is literally the exact same thing as social media. People hiding behind, you know, these platforms to write mean comments and basically troll online. So nothing is really changing. It's just the platform is changing.
Yeah, same problem.
So same problem. And I think it has a lot more to do with putting the right support into schools so kids get the right attention and help that they need, along with, you know, parents enabling people's passions, which I don't think is happening enough. And I think was a huge play into how, you know, I would say a lot of my friends and I have become successful was that my parents really enabled my passions, and that's where they put their energy and their time, because at the end of the day, a kid is happiest doing what they love.
The thing is, I don't know if it can, I feel like that's a whole other beast to tackle, to talk about, like, oh, it's down to the parenting, because it's like, if I was a parent right now, if you didn't let your kid have social media, they would be so ostracized. And, like, what's the answer? They have, like, that's part of, like, the generation. And I think,
yeah, but I'm not saying so no value. I'm not saying maybe no social media. I'm just saying
emphasis on other things.
I'm just
as
saying
well.
Emphasis on passion. Like, I think that is like a real key to enabling confidence. Because if we're talking really about confidence and people going online to get validation,
yeah,
then we're talking about how kids feel like they have to go somewhere else to get that.
Sure. That no, I agree.
Whereas you and I growing up would be like, I would feel confident when I was like shining in a dance class, or you would feel confident like shining on the cheerleading floor, or
yeah,
any of these other things that gave us that happiness. So I think it's much more about finding what makes a kid happy, mm-hmm, and making sure that they spend time doing that.
Yeah, and I still think, like, I mean, this is, again, just looking at, like, my younger cousins and that, like, they still are doing their sports, they're still doing their hockey, they're still doing all of that. I think maybe just one thing that is important to be aware of is screen time. And this is something that I've even found confronting. I mean, if you got an iPhone, you can check this out. It's the craziest thing, because I realize that in a week I spend 25 hours on YouTube, which is absurd. And part of me, I justify it because I'm like, oh, it's my job, I'm doing research. But also, I'm very aware that I'm just going on it for leisure and to, like, keep up with, like, YouTube drama and, like, things that are not adding value
YouTube
to my life.
Drama.
Oh, that's a whole other beast. But I think, honestly, just turning on, like, I have my app limits on. So I think for, like, Instagram, I have, like, 2 hours a day, and then it'll be like, yo, get off Instagram, you've been on it for too long. And just having things to be more mindful about your use of your phone. Oh, my God.
Yo, you're having problems today.
Ugh. The allergies. But just being mindful of that is the best step, I think, for now. And,
yeah,
and do I think this Instagram like thing is going to last? No, I'm sure we'll get the likes back, at least in Canada. Again, if you're, like, not from Canada, this is completely irrelevant to you. But
unless they roll it out globally.
Unless it's so effective that nobody has likes anymore.
Right.
But then again, it's just going to move to something else. So I don't know if that's the answer. I get what they're doing. That's cool. But
let's put it this way,
not the problem.
Which I always say.
Let's put it this way.
If it were me growing up now, I don't think, like, I'm what I'm trying to say is, it would be really hard to be a kid right now. And I appreciate that. My heart goes out to them, and I appreciate the effort that parents are putting in, and I appreciate that it's a different world, and even a different world than what our parents grew up in. So, I mean, like, I don't know what the right answer is.
Let's be real.
And I'm afraid for when we have kids, truly, because I don't know what that looks like.
I do, though, truly have so much hope, though, in terms of younger generations. I feel like when I look to older generations, I lose hope, and then when I look to the younger generations, I regain it, because
it's true.
Kids are, and nobody gives kids enough credit, and
they're,
I remember being
so creative and so passionate and so cool.
And, like, I hate to use this word, but so woke. We have access to so much information with the internet that we can be so educated, be so informed.
Did you know that you take, like, Photoshop classes in, like, grade 3? Like, my cousin, who's literally in, like, grade 3 or 4, is more proficient in, like, Adobe software than I am. And I think that's incredible. And I think
it's
only going
to learning.
No. And it's just going to push, and it's going to push these kids to be way more creative. And I think that, honestly, like, we're moving to a creative world. Like, we're moving into, like, more creative industries, more creative sectors. And those are the jobs that are going to become way more important, as opposed to the finance and, like, all of these, like, whatever.
I disagree.
Really? I think it's always going to be important. We're always going to need doctors. We're always going to need lawyers.
Of course.
Always going to need financial bankers, et cetera, et cetera. But I truly believe, and to be fair, I studied this in university, so there's actually, like, there's theoretics to back this up, but we are honestly moving towards a more creative world and a more innovative world because of technology.
Well, I think with a lot of automation of jobs, whether it be, like, no need for taxis anymore, we're going to have self-driven cars, a lot of jobs like that will be replaced. So I think people are going to have a lot more time to focus on what they're passionate about. So whether that comes to fruition with creative jobs, sure. It's going to be interesting, though. Like, I think as much as we talk about the cons of, like, the downsides of social media, and of course we're all aware of the negative effects, we all experience it. I still go on Instagram and I'm like, wow, I hate myself.
As well.
The positives so far outweigh it, and it's our job. So
it's,
I feel like,
true.
We have to say we are such advocates for it.
Totally.
But I truly think the amount of the things that I've gained from it in terms of knowledge, insights, perspective,
it totally outweighs the cons. I agree.
It's
and, like, now we live in just this beautiful global world where you can go online and have a conversation with someone or see someone's life happening on a totally different scale and or you know, having a totally different experience in another place in the world, and I think that's really beautiful. So
it's very beautiful. I think one thing
it's
that
easy to be negative about it. I actually think sometimes it is up to us to challenge ourselves to find the positives, because it really does connect all of us at the end of the day. the day.
And speaking of positives, something that I like to do in my everyday life, and Tori, I know you're on board with this, yeah. because every other friend hates that we do this, at the end of each day, and I think what we should start to do is do this at the end of every podcast,
yeah.
is wrap it up with some roses and thorns. Whoop! Woo! Our Tori, what's roses and thorns?
Our friends hate that we do this. We love it. So roses and thorns. So sharing roses is basically sharing the rose of your day and or week. We like to do two because, positives always outweigh the negatives. So the thorn, you get one thorn. Usually we do that one first to get the thorn out of the way. And then I don't know where the rosebud came from. I think that might have been like an invention.
This might have come from like some student council.
Yeah, like I don't know where it came from. But anyways, the rose bud is something that you're looking forward to whether today or this week.
A short term
goal or happy thing.
So basically what we do, roses and thorns every day to kind of self-reflect at the end of the day. But I think it'd be kind of a nice thing if we brought it into the podcast. And
it's also like a gratefulness exercise because it's all just about recognizing the positive things and letting there be a negative thing, but letting that, you know, pass through and moving on from it.
And what's so funny is because I get when people roll their eyes at it because it does seem so dumb. We're like, I'm going to do roses and thorns.
I don't think it's dumb.
I think it's kind of beautiful and I'm just going to bring it to the podcast.
I just also don't think it's dumb. And I think that people that don't like it are people that lack vulnerability because we've played it with friends that get like really uncomfortable. And I think it's just the fact that they don't want to be vulnerable and like share their feelings. And I think people have to work on that. So
here we are working on it. Tori, do you have any roses and thorns from this podcast or this day so far?
Sure. So rose is that I woke up at 6 a.m., which is unreal for me because like I normally don't get up that early. And I was just so...
to get out of the way first.
I know. Okay, but it's fine.
Okay, it's fine.
But I was so organized this morning and I have like a shoot later today and I like made my lunch. And guys, I do not cook like by any means. So this was just like, I was just very prepared for this day.
You really were.
Another rose is that I have dinner with my parents tonight. I'm super excited for that. They're the real ones, so I love to spend time with them. And I would say the thorn is just that our batteries have been going wacko today on this podcast. They've died like 8 times and we've had to like cut away and restart. Yeah. So if it's a bit choppy, you know why. It's just the fact that the batteries on the cameras are being crazy.
And what about a rosebud?
It is my childhood best friend's bachelorette party this Sunday, and that makes me feel old. So, but I'm looking forward to it because it's my first friend who's getting married, and I'm excited to, like, experience a bachelorette that's my friend's.
So, yeah, that's really fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me think. A thorn. I woke up extra phlegmy today. Woohoo. Love the seasonal hay fever. So that's definitely my thorn. There was leftover coffee from last night, so I didn't need to make a fresh pot. I just got to sip and enjoy. And another rose is the weather has been getting so good, and
it's very horrible today.
Well, today it's bad, but like the weather this week has been putting me in such a good
mood.
True. I'm so affected by like sunshine and like being able to be outside. So that's been good.
Health is wealth.
Health is wealth, baby. And a rosebud, I'm looking forward to. Okay, this is going to confuse the viewers, but I'm going to say I'm looking forward to this podcast hitting air.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be launching all three of these at the same time. Obviously, if you're listening, you know this. But I feel like we've been talking about doing this podcast for a while, so it feels so good to finally be doing it, and I'm so excited to see people's reactions.
It also feels like our little gem right now. Like, it feels like our own little, we're in a closet talking, and it's like our own little...
Yeah.
It's our own little fun, but also like we're having fun. So anyways, thanks for listening. If you have finished episode 2 of Potty Talk, God bless your soul and thank you so much for listening. We love you all and we'll be back for more and stay tuned. This has been Potty Talk,
the podcast where we shit talk ourselves.
See you next time. I'm Tor.
And I'm Jack. Bye guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.